Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. This week ends with Valentine's Day, so we'll begin the week with a simple question. What is the most romantic song ever? It's a question we'll pose to our guests and to you. But don't just give us a title. You have to make a case for it. Tell us why you think this song is so romantic. Like I say, it's a simple question, but it's a tough one because there are so many possibilities.
Whoa, my love.
And I love her.
Just the way you look tonight.
What'll I do when you are far away?
Strangers in the night, exchanging glances.
Let's stay together.
So tell us what you think is the most romantic song ever. We'll use some of your replies on the air, and we'll come up with a list of the best answers just in time for Valentine's Day. Post your comments on soundcheck.org or leave us a voicemail at 866-939-1612. Again, that's 866-939-1612 or soundcheck.org. Coming up, singer-songwriter Jeremy Messersmith and his band will play some songs that offer a kind of sidelong look at romance, and we'll get his answer to our question. But first, one of the most popular romances in recent TV history is Jim and Pam from the NBC series The Office. That was, of course, counterbalanced by the hilariously unpopular romance between Ryan and Kelly in the same show. Both were, in part, the work of B.J. Novak, executive producer of the series, director, screenwriter, and actor who played Ryan, the more or less permanent temp in The Office. He's joining us on Soundcheck to share a playlist of favorite songs, part of our regular series that we call Pick 3. B.J. Novak's latest work is a collection of short stories called One More Thing, Stories and Other Stories. B.J. Novak, welcome to
Thank you.
So, you know, it's a collection of short stories. You might think it's the kind of thing you can just pick it up and kind of shuffle through and read them in random, which I suppose you could do.
Yeah.
But if you read them in order, it's like things kind of come back.
It will pay off a little more strategically if you read it in order, but I expect people to jump around because that's what I do when I get a book. I actually read the very shortest stories I can first. I actually check the table of contents, count how many pages are in the gaps between stories because I just always want the least possible commitment when I start a book. So I always start with the shortest story. So that's fine if people do that.
But that actually could work with this book because the things that repeat generally start in the very short stories. And
yes, that's true. And then they will float into longer stories, little threads.
So you're a shuffle kind of guy? You listen to music on shuffle as opposed to starting at track one and going through the whole record?
Well, I never use the actual shuffle application because I like control. but I will choose an order. Yeah, I like jumping around. I like sort of an eclectic playlist.
Well, you've put together a pretty eclectic playlist for us today, starting with Elvis Presley. Now, Elvis is the focus of one of the bigger stories.
Yeah. There's a story, Quantum Non-Locality and the Death of Elvis Presley, and the story goes down much easier than the title. But that's a story about sort of late Elvis, which I always was fascinated by, and I didn't really realize that until I started the book. I was never an Elvis guy. But I was constantly, and Elvis appears in several stories in the book.
Right.
I didn't know why. But there was something to me about being Elvis, being a mythological thing, and the human being who had to be something as big as Coca-Cola.
Yeah.
You know, he really was, or as big as Mickey Mouse. That's who he was, and yet he was just a man who was these things. And how did he separate that? And it made sense to me how he sort of got lost and lost his sense of who he was, as people say. So he was very much on my mind, and I had a lot of sort of sympathy and curiosity for what this guy was like late in life.
Yeah. It's funny because I didn't know young Elvis. I didn't know hip, mm-hmm. you know, dangerous Elvis.
Right.
I knew fat old Vegas Elvis,
yeah.
you know, when I was a little kid.
Uh-huh.
And I kind of had the same. It was like, all right, what's the big deal?
Yeah. Right.
So, you know, while many of the stories in the book are laugh out loud funny, this one is more kind of, there's something poignant about it. You know, this character who,
yeah.
who's just a guy with this unbelievable kind of burden on him.
Yeah. Well, I always started each story with a comic idea, an idea that was, I thought was clever and surprising to me when it came to me.
Mm-hmm.
And this idea was, when I was a kid, the famous tabloid story that you'd see in the supermarket checkout line was always, Elvis alive, Elvis
right.
seen. And then one day it just all stopped. You just never saw that again.
Yeah.
And I think of it as around like 1994. When then it became about like real life celebrities. And I thought, what happened? How did everyone see him and then stop?
Where's dead Elvis?
Yeah.
Where's he been?
And I sort of wondered in my mind what it could have been, both in a sort of mystical way, but really in a practical way. Mm. What might have explained that?
Yeah. Well,
and then, you know, really trying to treat it seriously, to the, you know, be true to the emotions of this guy I was very curious about. I ended up putting more of that into the story than I expected.
Yeah. All right, so let's get to the first song on your playlist, because it is Elvis Presley, and this is kind of getting towards, I mean, we're into the
yeah.
70s here.
Yes, and when you listen to, or if you click around on iTunes and find late Elvis covers, it's unbelievable that Elvis did certain songs, and he seemed to misunderstand them so profoundly. He's still Elvis, the big heart of this American performer is still there. But he does a version of Something by the Beatles, and the first two lines he sings are, something in the way she moves attracts me like no other lover. Ha, ha, damn. Just so out of place in this sensitive song. And he also covers Bob Dylan.
Right.
Elvis Presley covers Bob Dylan late in life. There was a time when that actually happened. And he has a cover of one of my favorite songs of all time, Don't Think Twice, It's All Right. And again, he seems to fundamentally misunderstand it. He does it in a very rollicking, upbeat way, messes up some of the lyrics and keeps going. He has no understanding of, it seems, of this subtle pessimism and sadness of this song. It's just like a popular song that he was just going to do a version of. And yet, his spirit is still in there. The positive spirit of Elvis is shining through.
When the rooster crows at the break of dawn, look out your window, baby, I'll be gone. You're the reason I'm traveling on it. Don't think twice, it's all right. I'm heading down that long, lonesome road, girl, where I'm bound, I can't tell. Goodbye's too good a word, girl. I just say that he will. I ain't saying you treated me unkind. You could have done better, but I don't mind. You just sort of wasted my precious time. Ooh, don't think twice, it's all right.
Take it on. Elvis Presley's version of Don't Think Twice, It's All Right, the Bob Dylan song, part of BJ Novak's Pick 3 playlist for us. BJ Novak, the executive producer, director, and writer of the old NBC program, The Office, and now the author of the new book called One More Thing, Stories and Other Stories, sharing a Pick 3 playlist with us. It's almost like he saw the words, you know, traveling and road and right. thought, it's a road song.
That's exactly what he must have thought. Yeah.
Now, let me come back to something you said just a moment ago, which is in writing the Elvis Presley story, Quantum Non-Locality and the Death of Elvis Presley, you expressed a little surprise with how your own story turned out.
Yeah.
Does that happen a lot?
Yeah. And it's interesting. It's something that never happened to me when I wrote scripts. I always outlined them very carefully, wanted every moment to call back, needed to know where each character was going in the course of an episode of television, for instance. And with these stories, I would often start and be very surprised at where I ended up going. Yeah. It was just a different creative process somehow.
You know who says that a lot? Songwriters. We have songwriters really? In here every day, mm-hmm. and I often hear that. You know, mm-hmm. it's like sometimes you write a whole record, yeah. and the artist will say, wow, where did that come from?
It might come from a more abstract part of your mind. And I tried to be true to my fantasy of being a songwriter through these stories. I liked the idea. That's why some of the pieces are so short and I wouldn't exactly say abstract, but they have an abstract edge to them.
Yep, yep.
And also why I liked mixing them up. I told friends I was trying to order the stories more like an album than like a collection of stories. I wanted to know what led into the next when you'd feel like a different type of subject or length mm-hmm. or narrator.
Have you ever tried writing songs?
No. If I could start all over again, I would 100% be a songwriter. I think it's the best form of writing in just about every way. It's the most important. It's the most satisfying. It gets you the most recognition. It's the most beautiful. It's the most timeless. And it's the most perfect way. I've always envied songwriters that they can have a shot at expressing, coming up with the perfect expression of a single emotion or thought or observation.
Yeah.
If you're Paul Simon and you notice something that no one's noticed before and you write a song about it, you have a shot at for all time having defined it. And you can't really do that as great as novels or films are. They're too unwieldy. They will take you further from... You might stumble on other great things, but you'll never be perfect. They're just too big.
And songs, you know, you have to... It's like, you know, you've got that 3 minutes and maybe, you know, you can stretch it to four. Yeah. You can stretch it to 10 if you want, yeah. but you still have a finite amount of time to get that yeah. expression just right.
Yeah.
We're speaking with B.J. Novak, the actor and comedian, screenwriter, director, and author. His book is called One More Thing, Stories and Other Stories. You have been known to bust a rhyme from time to time.
You're referring to Subtle Sexuality?
I am referring to Subtle Sexuality,
yes.
the kind of video spin-off series from The Office. And we have this clip of you in character as Ryan, the
Wonderful.
Intern, in the song called Male Prima Donna.
They call me Mr. Understood because no one understands me. But when I spit rhymes, everybody buys my CD. You get out of the car so slow. How was I supposed to know? You keep saying stuff behind my back. Then how come I got the number one track? I'm the OG Prima Donna. My rhymes bite like piranha. Hotter than a sauna. Straight out of Lackawanna.
All right, I think we've made you suffer enough.
Thank you very much.
I can't believe B.J. Novak is blushing here in our studio
yeah.
on Soundcheck.
What did you, yeah.
Subtle Sexuality
on, like,
was the
coolest music station. They bust that out. Yeah, great. Perfect timing.
Who was the most musical cast member on The Office? Seems like everybody
A lot
loved,
of musical
yeah.
cast members. And occasionally there'd be a break, especially if we're on location, and a couple musical instruments would come out. Craig Robinson is a major... musician, piano,
mm-hmm.
especially. Ed Helms has a banjo trio he has.
And busted out a sitar.
Creed Bratton had a
Creed,
number one hit
yep, yep.
With Live for Today with the Grassroots back in, I think, 1970 or something like that.
It was
era.
Even earlier, I think.
Yeah, it might have been.
Creed's been on the show.
Oh, great.
Almost as bizarre in person to talk to as he, I mean, delightfully
so. He is the
so.
Exact same guy. I don't know if he knew we were making a fictional TV show. I think he thought he worked at a paper company.
B.J. Novak's with us on Soundcheck today. So let's get to the second pick in your pick three, which I was really pleasantly surprised to see that you've picked the Australian singer-songwriter Courtney Barnett.
I love her. I play her all the time. I play... this is my favorite song, Avant Gardner, but I love this whole album. I love everything she's put out. It's so spare and cool. It reminds me of Nirvana. Or Hole, it reminds me of sort of that early era, but the lyrics are more it's sort of a very modern way of writing lyrics.
She's got a very wry kind of sense of humor.
Yeah, wry, raw, just great.
Yeah.
I could listen to her all day.
Well, let's listen to her. The song is Avant Gardner, Courtney Barnett. She'll actually be playing here in our soundcheck studio later this month, but here she is on BJ Novak's Pick 3 playlist.
I sleep in late, another day. Oh, what a wonder, oh, what a waste. It's a Monday, it's so mundane. What exciting things will happen today. The yard is full of hard rubbish, it's a mess. And I guess the neighbors must think we run a meth lab. We should amend that. I pull the sheets back, it's 40 degrees and I feel like I'm dying. Life's getting hard in here, so I do some gardening. Anything to take my mind away from where it's supposed to be. The nice lady next door talks of green beds and all the nice things that she wants to plant in them. I want to grow tomatoes on the front steps, sunflowers.
Courtney Barnett, Australian singer-songwriter, and Avant Gardner from her 2013 EP, How to Carve a Carrot into a Rose. And BJ Novak, my guest on Soundcheck, sharing some of his favorite songs on our Pick 3 playlist today. And you mentioned that she has a very kind of modern style of songwriting.
It feels to me, I actually wouldn't even know if it's just songwriting, but sort of the lack of boundaries between the way you would text, the way you would talk to a friend, the way you would write a novel. It feels like it's all one voice to her.
Right.
And I feel like that's very modern.
Well, you know, the reason I ask is that the book, One More Thing, these stories have a kind of, you know, as emotionally varied as they are, from really hilarious to the more touching and poignant, there's a consistent kind of voice, which you would have to say is a modern. It was clearly, this was not a book written in the 1940s or 50s. Mm-hmm. Is that kind of a conscious thing on your part?
Well, it's very conscious to use my voice, and I would expect that my voice is a product of the time that I live in. So I think it's not like I need to be the guy who writes in 2014. I think that would be a failure if I set out to do that. But I did want to be sure that I didn't imitate another era or imitate an era that I thought of as more literary, to write like a 1950s writer or an 1890s writer, or even, you know, a lot of writers like Philip Roth, an amazing writer who sounds like the books he's most well known for sound like the decades and 70s, 80s, 90s. But I wanted to sound like someone of my time. I just wanted to sound like my own voice. So, and I think that voice is, a lot of people don't take seriously the text messages and the Facebook comments. And while I'm not on all of those forms, I'm on several of them. And that is a quicker evolving form than I've ever seen. And there are rules to it, whether or not they're formal rules. And it does influence how people talk. And even the spellings of abbreviations go in and out of style in the course of a couple months.
It's amazing what's happening to our language.
Yeah.
You know, you think of like the early 1800s when dictionaries were being written and things were being codified in terms of spelling and punctuation.
Yeah.
So we're going through that again.
Yes.
I mean, the language is evolving so fast.
Very fast, especially written language. And I, as a writer, love that so much of our communication is written now. Our most casual conversation is all written.
Yeah.
I think that the most important people in language are the designers of emojis. I think that if that designer had made that sort of, on the Apple emojis anyway, had made that wry sort of sly smile a little higher, people would be in slightly different moods when they got it.
Yeah.
And I think if the smile were brighter, if the frown were more evocative, I think this is the alphabet that people designed that are used almost as much as words to many people, and that's an incredible amount of creative and linguistic power.
Do you do a lot of? Do you have a favorite emoji?
Yeah, it's that sly face.
I love
that guy. I want to get the movie rights to do that guy's life story. I just love him.
BJ Novak's my guest on Soundcheck, sharing a Pick 3 playlist with us today. And speaking of voices, do you read the audiobook version of One More Thing?
I read it with a lot of incredibly talented guests who read the voices that I felt I should have guessed for. Katy Perry reads The Girl Who Gave Great Advice, this incredibly heartfelt friend who can only give advice in the form of, what does your heart tell you? What does your gut tell you?
Right.
And it turns out always to be the best advice. Julianne Moore reads Walking on Eggshells or When I Loved Tony Robbins. Jason Schwartzman and I were in this movie Saving Mr. Banks together, so we read this story, Constructive Criticism, together. A couple of my office pals. I loved doing the audiobook. It was like an intense month of directing and accumulating that sort of
So you were directing
cast.
The book as well.
Kelly Gildea was the sort of the audiobook producer who directed me. But when I was with an actor I knew in the studio, I would direct them in the sense of explaining what the idea was of the story.
Yeah. Now, there's a trailer for the book as well, which is hysterical.
Thank you.
And features.
Oh, and of course, Mindy's all over the audiobook.
Mindy Kaling.
Yeah.
And is in the trailer as well. And the trailer, much of it is hysterically badly dubbed in French.
Yes.
And your third pick for us is a French band. What is it with you and the French?
I don't understand a word, but I love it. And I love not being able to understand it, because to me that is the mystery that we need in our lives. There needs to be something that you don't understand at all, but you wish you could be in that world. And for me that is everything classically French. That is the fashion, the literary glamour, all these things. And I went to Paris and didn't talk to a soul, didn't understand anything, just kind of looked at everybody and felt like, oh, this is cool. I guess you need something like that in your life. So that's what the French stuff is for me.
So this band is called Niagara,
mm-hmm.
French kind of synth pop. They sound like the Eurythmics to me.
And
the song is called Pendant que le champ brûlant.
I could never have said that. This was the ultimate internet discovery for me. I heard this on an internet radio station. I Shazammed it, and I put it on my Spotify, and I never understood a word, and I listen to it all the time. I just love it.
Do you want to know what it means?
What does it mean?
While the fields are burning.
That's cool.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's this happy, sort of poppy-sounding number with this kind of dark title.
Oh, I knew I liked it for a reason.
Little bit of music from the French synth-pop duo known as Niagara. The song is Pendant que le champ brûle, while the fields are burning.
I knew that.
BJ Novak, the actor and comedian, screenwriter, director, and author of the new book One More Thing, Stories and Other Stories, sharing his Pick 3 playlist with us. The book is, as I've said, both funny and at times very tender. Do you consider yourself to be a romantic person?
Yes, and I say that with sort of the irony of knowing that I don't think that's a good thing. I think that being, not a good thing, but I think that being a romantic is it's a delusion. It's a good one and a happy one, but I think if that were a real way to be, then it would just be called realist. A romantic is someone who romanticizes, and I am that way, and I love that about other people. And I think that's a very important thing, to be able to go to that next realm of imagining that there is something incredible just out of reach.
All this week we're asking people on Soundcheck about the most romantic song of all time.
Yeah.
You got a candidate for us?
I want to make a case for When You Were Mine by Prince, which is probably my single favorite song. And I think, speaking to the point I just made, that you can't have an even match. Love needs some longing to be expressed in the form of a song. Just two people gazing into each other's eyes would just say, I love you, or say nothing. They wouldn't need a song.
Right.
There needs to be something you're trying to overcome. And the tension in When You Were Mine, I love you more than I did when you were mine. Who hasn't felt that? That, to me, is the most visceral type of need and longing. And the song is so much fun. It's so addictive, and it really expresses that regret and urgency and attempt in the most exciting way.
Yeah.
It's the most exciting, upbeat song about regret and loss and trying to reclaim something that may never have been there the way you see it now. And to me, that's the ultimate romantic song.
And as you say, it wouldn't just be the same thing if it was just one person speaking to another person. There was a third person lurking in the background.
Oh, yeah. No, there's obstacles in this song. Otherwise, you wouldn't need a song.
It is a great song. All right. That's a really terrific candidate for most romantic song of all time. From B.J. Novak, we'll hear Prince's When You Were Mine. The book is called One More Thing. It is out now. B.J., this has been so much fun. Thank you for being with us. I have loved talking to you.
Thank you.
Mine by Prince. That's BJ Novak's pick for the most romantic song ever. We want you to make your case for a single song as the most romantic of all time. Post your comment at soundcheck.org or leave us a message at 866-939-1612. Okay, we're going to leave Prince behind, but we're going to stick around in his hometown because Minneapolis-based singer-songwriter Jeremy Messersmith is in the studio. He's here to play songs with his band from his latest record, next on Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Singer-songwriter Jeremy Messersmith from Minneapolis has a brand new album out. It's called Heart Murmurs. Now, that title suggests an album of love songs, and that's true to an extent. Though with tracks like this one called Tourniquet, some of those love songs have a little twist to them. On his website, Jeremy says, I've been fine-tuning the live show, and I'm excited to rock out with you. As much as a singer-songwriter dude can rock, that is. Well, we'll find out now, because here's Jeremy Messersmith and his band to play the song Ghost live on Soundcheck.
One more night in Omaha, bus stop just before the dawn. Cold wind followed me somehow. Through parking lots and shopping malls, rinse my thoughts in alcohol. Black clouds rolling over me. If there is a line, I'll cross it. No lesson will I learn. Even if I'm standing, I'm broke my heart with sticks and stones, swore I'm never coming home. Last words never written down. Been so long since I've been gone, doubt if you'll know me at all. Shadows long, one more hour till Wichita. Sunlight never felt so kind. If there is a line, I'll cross it. The lesson will I learn, even if I'm standing. I won't burn. Coming back to where we started, I'm only passing through. I've become a ghost in your garden, fading into
That is Jeremy Messersmith and his band live on Soundcheck in a song called Ghost, which is on Jeremy's new record called Heart Murmurs. Live performance here in the studio, Jeremy singing and playing acoustic guitar, Peter Sieve playing electric guitar, the bass played by Ian Allison, Sarah Purbix at our piano, and Andy Thompson behind our drum kit. Jeremy, to you and the gang, welcome.
Thanks for having us.
So that song, the video for that is now running on Rolling Stone's website, where you tell them a little story about kind of the genesis of that song. You went back to try and visit your childhood home, is that right?
Yeah, I hadn't been to my hometown in about 10 years. My family had long since kind of moved on, but it's kind of where I had the bulk of my childhood memories, you know, and kind of coming-of-age stuff.
Well, the song mentions at the beginning Omaha, and then later mentions Wichita. Is hometown one of those two?
It's actually neither. I grew up in a little place called the Tri-Cities in Washington State, which is kind of on the eastern side. Lots of desert, lots of kind of rolling hills, no trees kind of a thing.
Desert?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
I didn't realize it was desert in Washington State.
Most people don't.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So, I mean, is that sort of a function of being out on the road a lot and maybe feeling kind of rootless if you do it long enough?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it only takes me about a week of being on the road before I'm like, who am I? Well, you know, like, where do I come from? You know, you feel like kind of a nomad, especially for me, because I'm really a homebody. I when I'm home, I don't really go out and do much. So,
And apparently when you're out on the road very often, you're in people's homes. You do a lot of house concerts and stuff?
Yeah, I do. I just got tired of touring in the conventional way where, you know, you get tired of green rooms and lousy food and not being able to talk to people or talking over a really loud PA. And so I kind of designed a tour, a potluck tour, where I would go and everybody brings food and I'd sit around and play a bunch of songs. And it was great. Best tour I've ever done.
When was that?
That was about a year and a half ago. But then I did a show just recently, a few days ago.
But not with this crew, I'm guessing.
No, I dropped them off to go see a movie, and then I kept all the food for myself.
So the kids go see a movie, daddy's going to play a show, that
yeah,
sort of thing.
Yeah, that. I love that I'm the tour dad.
Jeremy Messersmith with us on Soundcheck. Your Wikipedia page says the following. He has opened for President Barack Obama and Vice President Joe Biden on separate occasions. What could that possibly be referring to?
Oh, the height of election season or midterms, and they've got to come in and stump for some local Minnesotans running for office. So,
okay, so it's not like they were out there singing their songs and you were the.
I would love to see Joe pick up a guitar and start strumming a bit.
I would pay good money. I would go to a potluck concert.
Indeed, I would as well.
So basically, you were.
Yeah, I'm like the pre-show. Hey, everybody, let's get excited and here we go. You know, and I get to kind of awkwardly have my photo taken with Joe Biden, which was kind of fun. You know?
Do you have to be a registered Democrat for that sort of thing to happen?
I don't think so. I'm well on the books as an established lefty. So it just my phone rings, and sometimes I can do it, sometimes I can't.
Now the new record, which is called Heart Murmurs, this is your first album on the Glassnote label, which is the label that the Big Phoenix record was out on a couple of years ago. Mumford and Sons, Childish Gambino, Donald Glover. So lots of people are going to be hearing you for the first time. Does that change how you approach making this record?
Well, it terrifies me a bit more, to be honest. But as far as making it, not really. We kind of wanted to play with a bigger kind of pop-sounding palette for this record and kind of push ourselves. So it was always meant to be maybe heard by a few more people. And, that doesn't mean watering anything down, but it kind of means being maybe a little bigger and bolder with some of the arrangements.
And so everybody in the band sings.
Yeah,
so
they do. Yeah.
They talk about three-part, four-part harmony. You guys have five. Amps go up to 11.
We're doing okay for ourselves.
Yeah. Jeremy Messersmith is here in our Soundcheck studio. He and the band will be at the Crowfoot in Pontiac, Michigan for you WDET listeners on February 12th, but they're here in the studio today playing for us on Soundcheck. Can you set up this next song for us? This is one of my favorite tracks off the record called It's Only Dancing.
Cool. I kind of had the title first, and then it was one of those things where I quickly had the idea and had to hurriedly jot it all down or get the sketch out before it kind of disappeared. But I grew up in a very kind of a no dancing kind of religious upbringing at all.
Wow.
And so dancing to me always had kind of this weird connotation. I remember the first time I ever danced with someone, I was just kind of terrified, petrified, sweaty. You know, it was just like, it was just so strange. And I've always kind of carried that memory with me.
You feel you were doing something illicit by dancing?
Kind of. I was like, it's innocent. But maybe it's not. I don't know. You know, it's kind of all
those
things.
Well, I mean, for centuries, people, religious conservatives have looked at dancing as just like the first step to the inevitable sin.
A big joke in my denomination that was
What denomination is that?
Oh, Assemblies of God, the denomination I grew up in.
Assemblies of God.
Mm-hmm, yeah. The big joke is that why is Assemblies of God against premarital sex? And the answer is, well, because it might lead to dancing. Yeah, sing.
There's a drummer in the room. Where's my ba-doom-ba? Thank you, man.
So that's, I think that's where that song came from.
All right, let's hear it. It's called It's Only Dancing. It's Jeremy Messersmith and his band live on Soundcheck.
Late night call and I'm at your door. Teenage tears on the kitchen floor. I
pull you close and hold my breath. Feel your heartbeat through your summer dress. Shuffle our feet slowly to the stereo. And if your boyfriend suddenly appears, if your father comes home and finds us here, you and I, we won't need an alibi. It's only dancing. It's only dancing. Something that all good friends do. It's not like I'm in love with you. What a crazy idea, where did you get that? So let's tangle up our fingertips and I'll rest a hand upon your hips. There's nothing to see, it's all so innocent. So
Jeremy Messersmith and his band with a live performance on Soundcheck of It's Only Dancing. You'll find it on the brand new album called Heart Murmurs from Jeremy Messersmith. Let's hear another song. This one's called I Wanna Be Your One Night Stand.
I know I may not look like much. Guess the years have been a little rough. I'm not worried, no, I've got it planned. I wanna be your one-night stand. We'll check into a dive motel. carpet's worn and the curtains smell. TV's old, wallpaper bland. I wanna be your one night stand. Oh, we'll get drunk on a box of wine. Oh, making love underneath the vacancy sign. You don't have to meet my folks. I won't bore you with my stupid jokes. I'm just a guy with a minivan. I wanna be your one-night stand. Oh, we'll get drunk on a box of wine. Oh, making love underneath the vacancy. So let's leave the kids at home. You wear that blouse, I'll wear cheap cologne. Throw away our wedding bands. I wanna be your one night stand.
Jeremy Messersmith, solo that time here on Soundcheck with I Wanna Be Your One Night Stand. I'm guessing the Assembly of God people might not have cottoned on to that title so much, but this song turns out to be like a lovely little romantic thing at the end.
Right, yeah. It kind of starts trashy but ends noble.
Yeah. Jeremy, you were talking before about your family, you know, growing up in this mm-hmm. denomination. It sounded like that was maybe something that was in the past that you're no longer a part of. Is that right?
Yeah, I wouldn't identify myself with it anymore, I guess.
Well, you know, the reason I ask is because the name Messersmith is such an unusual name, and I'm just kind of wondering about the family. You know, when I think Messersmith, as a lifelong baseball fan...
You think of Andy Messersmith.
Andy Messersmith.
Yeah, sure.
You know, not just a great pitcher, but hugely important in baseball history as a pioneer.
First free agent.
Pioneer in free agency, absolutely.
Yeah,
so you know your Messersmiths.
Well, you know, he pops up on Twitter every now and again on baseball trivia websites, so I'm like, oh, yeah.
Not related?
No, not that I know of. I mean, there can't be too many of us Messersmiths, but...
You'd be surprised. What about George S. Messersmith?
The ambassador?
Very good.
Oh, yeah.
Man, you do know your Messersmiths.
I Google myself far too frequently.
George S. Messersmith, he wasn't just an ambassador. He was the American consul in Berlin as Hitler was getting going there in Germany. And he's the guy who got Einstein his visa.
Really?
To get to the United States.
Wow, amazing.
Yeah, but not related.
Not that I know of.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah,
now, of course, Messersmith is a sort of Anglicization Messerschmitt.
That's right, yeah.
Willy Messerschmitt, the guy who created all those fighter aircraft in World War II.
Yeah, all that
I'm
stuff.
I'm guessing that's not a family member either.
No, I don't think so.
I think you can be categoric in your no for that one.
That is a definite no. My great-grandparents immigrated long before that.
Yeah. So the new album, Heart Murmurs, you're touring around to support that. And when you get back home to Minneapolis, mm-hmm. you play at First Avenue there, right?
Yeah.
Now, that's like the big deal club in Minneapolis, right?
I think that's fair to say, yeah.
Isn't that like Prince plays there occasionally and stuff?
It's kind of part of the Prince myth because it's where they filmed a lot of the film Purple Rain. So, you know, there was a rumor that Prince owned it for a number of years, and they kind of fed that. I don't think he ever did, but, you know, it made people more interested in it, added to the mystique. But, I'd say it's kind of the premier rock venue in town, yeah.
All right. So that's in the future when you get off this current tour. February 12th at the Crowfoot in Pontiac, Michigan for our WDET listeners. Jeremy, to you and the band, thanks for coming in playing for us today.
Thank you for having us.
It's been a lot of fun. This is Soundcheck.
His dad's loaded, at least that's what he says. He's so good at making promises. Walks on water.
Up next, another pick in our search for the most romantic song ever. Plus, a bonus track from our recent session with singer-songwriter Jason Isbell. That's next on Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. At the top of the show tonight, we kicked off a week-long search for the most romantic song ever. Because Valentine's Day is right around the corner, we're asking you to state your case for the most romantic song, either on the website, soundcheck.org, or with a voicemail. Leave us a message at 866-939-1612. The Malaysian singer-songwriter Yuna was recently in our studio playing songs from her latest album, Nocturnal, and she turned in a great performance that you'll hear on the show tomorrow night. But we also asked Yuna for her most romantic song ever, and here's what she said.
Wow, for me, it would have to be, I love Coldplay, and I think every song from Coldplay could easily be the most romantic song. But
I'm going to pin you down to one, Yuna.
Just
one song.
It would have to be The Scientist. Yeah. Also because, you know, like from the film Wicker Park. I don't know if you watched that.
I haven't.
Oh my God. It's like, you know, the last moment. And then they play that song. I'm like, oh my God, this has to be like the best song ever written.
I think it might be my favorite Coldplay song, actually.
The Scientist?
The Scientist. Mm-hmm. It's a great song.
Come up to meet you, tell you I'm sorry. You don't know how lovely you are. I had to find you, tell you. Tell you I set you apart. Tell me your secrets and ask me your questions. Now let's go back to the start.
That's The Scientist by Coldplay, picked by the singer Yuna as the most romantic song ever. Make your case for the most romantic song on soundcheck.org. Or leave us a voicemail at 866-939-1612. You can hear more from Yuna. She'll perform on tomorrow's Soundcheck, plus a special Valentine's Day edition of our occasional series, That Was a Hit? We'll try to figure out what a series of disastrous love songs were doing on the pop charts. Plus, a celebration of the film musical. Sort of. That's tomorrow on Soundcheck. We're going to leave you tonight with a bit of our recent visit from Jason Isbell, the singer-songwriter and former member of Drive-By Truckers. Jason's latest album is called Southeastern, and many critics thought it was one of the best records of the year. Many of you apparently like it as well, because this acoustic session with Jason performing, along with the musician Amanda Shires, also his wife, has been one of the most popular things on soundcheck.org lately. So we'll end the show tonight with a song that didn't make it onto the program last week. It's called Different Days. It's Jason Isbell with Amanda Shires on fiddle on Soundcheck.
Staring at the pictures of the runaways on the wall. It seems like these days you couldn't run away at all. Even if you did, what you got to run away to? Just another drunk daddy with a white man's point of view. I can see you in my mind's eye catching light. Sleep beside the river if we make it out of town tonight. You can strip in Portland from the day you turn 16. You got one thing to sell, benzodiazepine. 10 years ago I might seen you dancing in a different light and offered up my help in different ways, but those were different days. Those were different days. Had a girl back home and we shared a single bed. When I whispered in her ear, she believed every word I said. And if she didn't believe, she didn't dare give me a slack. It was, baby, I love you, get off of my goddamn back. Time went by and left again. Jesus loves a sinner, but the highway loves a sin. My daddy told me, I believe he told me true, that the right thing's always the hardest thing you do. 10 years ago I might have stuck around for another night and used her in 1,000 different ways. Those were different days. Those were different days. And the story's only mine to live and die with. And the answer's only mine to come across. But the ghost that I got scared and I got high with look a little lost.
Jason Isbell with Amanda Shires on violin. Different Days is the name of the song. One of the songs from his album Southeastern, big hit last year, and one of the tunes they played for us in the Soundcheck studio. You can hear the whole session on our website, soundcheck.org. Soundcheck's a production of WNYC. Irene Trudell leads our engineering team with Paul Schneider, Bill O'Neill, and Jason Isaac. The show is produced by Katie Bishop, Dan O'Donnell, Mike Katziff, with Amy Pearl. Our executive producer is Joel Meyer. I'm John Schaefer. That does it for Soundcheck today.